What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. If you are new here, Polititeen is a podcast that hopes to spark political conversation in our youth by talking about current politics with people that are currently politically active. With that being said, thank you for tuning in to today's episode, and as always, happy listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hey guys, my name is Varun. I am a co-host of the Polititeen podcast along with Damien. We're here today trying to spark conversation between America's youth about the issues of importance to us and people across America, and to really spark people to go to the voting polls this November and make their vote count. Now today with us, we have a very special guest. Once again, we have Charlie, a student from our area who happens to know a lot about political issues and wants to make his voice heard. So Charlie, I would love if you kind of give a brief description of yourself.
All right. Hi, I'm Charlie. I'm 16. I'm a student at a local Catholic school, and I am a member of the LGBTQIA plus community.
Awesome. So I think that we're going to model our discussion today to all of our viewers off of kind of a discussion format like we had with Will. And so I think that we should first of all discuss, Damien and Charlie, the Supreme Court's decision a couple of weeks ago with regards to the LGBTQIA community. And that was that they have protections in the workplace and they can't be discriminated based upon the sexuality in the workplace. And I think it was a landmark decision. It definitely was. And I wanted to gauge your perspectives on how that can influence the American viewpoint towards this kind of group, and also what that means, you know, going into the future. And Charlie, I'd like to gauge your perspective to begin with.
All right. Well, yeah, I think it's a huge landmark decision, although, of course, sometimes it's debatable whether it was performative or not, since they were, you know, around the same time they were making discriminations against transgender people. But I think in general, I mean, any Supreme Court decision obviously makes headlines. You know, it definitely could shape the way Americans view LGBTQ rights. I mean, since Roe v. Wade changed the way for the pro-choice movement, I feel like it could definitely improve the lives of many LGBTQ Americans, since discrimination in the workplace is such a huge problem that we face.
Yeah, no, and especially here in Georgia, you know, I think we were talking about it with Natalie Varun, if I'm not mistaken, but she was bringing up the fact that, you know, they tried to pass the religious freedoms bill, if I'm not mistaken, that religious freedoms bill or something like it, again, I can be completely off, but it basically would allow people to discriminate. It was just a discrimination bill that would allow them to discriminate based on the basis of religion. It was just meant to discriminate against LGBTQ plus members. And so I think that this is something that's going to, you know, support them throughout the nation. And I think that it's not only landmark in the sense that it's going to just change the perspective from now on, but it's also going to allow future generations to kind of have a different perspective on LGBTQ people.
So absolutely.
Yeah, so I actually think Varun's audio cut out because of some Wi-Fi issues. He just texted me right now. But I think, Charlie, my first question for you either way was going to be, you know, I not being a member of the LGBTQ community, I would say that I have been like completely mm-hmm. misinformed about just different stuff. And so I've heard very different things about how you become a member of the LGBTQ community. Some people say they were born as a member, yep. and other people say that they just become a member throughout their lives. So I wanted to know kind of how you became a member of the LGBTQ plus community.
Well, a lot of people have different theories and ideas. I think the problem with trying to see if it is a genetic thing is then that some people might try to, you know, genetically mutate that gene out of children when they're fetuses. So that's, I think, where the science is taking a turn. But I definitely feel like if I wasn't born the way I am, it was definitely strongly, well, like when I was at a very young age, because most of my life, at least as far as I can remember, I've certainly felt as though I wasn't, a heterosexual. I can't speak on the ways of my transgender or non-binary friends, but as far as I'm sure, it's a very similar experience where Some people, if they think about it long enough when they were young, they can tell. Others, it's sort of a slow process of realization. And sometimes it's just this big aha moment when you could be well into your way of life. And it just happens differently for everyone, I guess. I certainly think there could be a genetic component. I mean, it's certainly not something you choose, but I mean, I'm not an expert on the science.
Right. And I'm back on the podcast now. My Wi-Fi cut out completely. But I think that, you know, my question to you is, we're having so much discussion about the basis of sexuality. And I want to talk to you about coming out, because I think coming out has been something that people misunderstand and misrepresent in today's world. And, you know, coming out has been a hard thing for a lot of my friends, members of the LGBTQI community specifically. So I wanted to ask you, you know, if you don't mind telling us, what is kind of your experience with coming out, and how do you think we can kind of raise acceptance in our community for that community, the LGBTQI community, that is, specifically here in our community?
Yeah, well, coming out, it's different for everyone. I think especially the past few decades, because coming out originally was a term used for when a gay member would come out to the gay community. It was sort of a big celebration of their realization of their sexuality. But nowadays it is used more in context of coming out to straight people or to your friends or family. My coming out, horrible. Everyone has coming out stories. I came out to my parents when I was first discovering myself, and it did not go well. So I ran back into the closet for another 2 years. But I think there are a lot of things that people feel like they should say. I mean, you don't want to come across too strong, but you also don't want to be too blasé about the whole thing. It's a very delicate thing, and it's everyone's experience is different. I think you have to judge the situation. Like, I mean, if you know the person well, you can be a good judge of how they would want you to react. But I mean, definitely being supportive, it's just a huge thing, especially if you're one of the first people they come out to. That can be life-changing, honestly.
Yeah, and I know friends in the closet, a lot of them. And it's one of the most brave and courageous things when I hear people like you who have gone through that. I guess it's an ultimate kind of realizing yourself. And it takes a lot, because a lot of people aren't comfortable with who they are, even if they are heterosexual. They're really uncomfortable with who they are. And Damien and I talked about this, and we talk about it almost every single day. Being comfortable with yourself is one of the main things that distinguishes somebody who is sound with themselves. And I think that by you coming out and doing so, even with so much adversity, I respect you for it. And I always will. Every single member of the LGBTQIA community who has done that and made that ultimate kind of decision, I think I have the utmost respect for them.
Yeah,
that means a lot.
I have to agree with Varun 100%. Now, if you had one thing that you think would make it easier and would make kind of it easier, I guess, socially, what would you think that would be?
Oh, definitely to teach it at a young age. I know I didn't even realize gay people existed until I was probably in middle school. I mean, I knew they existed, but that it was like a real thing people could be. I think just having representation in media, in books, children's books, it's such a huge, easy thing, because, you know, prejudice is taught. It's not inherited.
Yeah.
And I think that would just make a world of difference.
Yeah, I mean, 1,000%. You know, Damien and I both talk about the fact, a Nelson Mandela quote, that is, that it really to the promise that racism isn't something that you're born with. You're born, not racism specifically, but discrimination. You're born as a kind of a blank slate. And it's even psychologically proven. Your mind gets filled with these ideas based upon what you see. And I think that we're having more representation in movies, books, and TV shows now. And I'm glad we are for the LGBTQIA community. But I mean, I think that the representation issue sometimes lies with who we're taught from. And I think schools should also try to implement more people as part of the LGBTQIA community, as teachers and as counselors, because I don't know how you've experienced it, but I think we need to have more safe spaces for people of the LGBTQIA community to talk about their differences with people who they kind of coagulate with. So I guess I wanted to ask you one thing on my personal end. What has been an avenue for you to express your kind of journey And I think that, I mean, a lot of people have places where they confide in. So I guess I wanted to ask you, what has that place been for you to walk through this journey with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you talk to any gay person, it's really funny because we all sort of find each other in our own little friend groups before any of us come out. So definitely for me, theater has been, it's historically been a pretty LGBTQ plus friendly place. But that's definitely where I found my group. A lot of people in social media, even just seeing, even if I don't follow people, I'll see posts on my Explore page. People will be talking in the comments, creating group chats, stuff like that. Especially now that that's a thing that can happen. That's a huge place for many people. But for me, I guess theater specifically would be just throughout the years, I found people of all different walks of life that I've been able to share our similar experiences with.
You know, and this kind of brings me off on a tangent. I don't know why, just, you know, the whole conversation with theater kind of reminded me. And I wanted to ask both of you guys, did you guys know about the, you know, especially with Hamilton coming out and stuff, about the like, very blatant connections within the Hamilton play that are believed to be Alexander Hamilton's references to being a member of the LGBTQ, particularly bisexual community?
I had no idea, personally.
I had heard of it before. I've seen a few things. But, I mean, it's definitely plausible seeing some of the letters and stuff he had written between some of his fellow soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea about it, and I think that it's awesome. I don't know if it's purposeful on the play. I don't know if people are just drawing conclusions because of it, but I think that it's a, you can't ignore the fact that beyond the play, that Alexander Hamilton definitely did have some interesting letters that he would send to male soldiers. And I think that it's awesome that if it is represented in that sense in the play, and I think that more representation needs to really come out in different forms of media. And I think that the representation needs to be more of a character who is gay, not a gay character, if you get what I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, can you gauge on that? Can you kind of like explain to the audience, you know, from your perspective, how that feels to, because I feel like a lot of the characters within shows are, their main personality is that they're gay and that's it.
Yeah, you have to find the balance, because a lot of people, being gay is a huge part of their identity, but in representation, especially today, as people are trying to just get in those diversity points, you'll see characters that are far less three-dimensional because they try to make that they're all that they are, and that's enough of a character. Because there's so practically every story I can think of where there is a gay character, the story is about them being gay, not about being a character. So it's very difficult to find that part of the balance of representation as well as making them a round three-dimensional character. But I think, I mean, having them just as people instead of as talking points would definitely be a huge plus for the community.
No, yeah, I think that I 1,000% agree. Talking points and not people has been a main thing that's been kind of seen in television, in books and everything like that. You know, we saw, I don't know if you guys know, but Dumbledore, J.K. Rowling said he was gay. And even SpongeBob has been revealed as gay. And these are that America has loved for so long. And the fact that Americans are so against people of the LGBTQIA community, but once they see these kinds of things, people who are they're familiar with and they love and know, being gay, I think that it sometimes opens up their minds. Whereas if you have people who their whole role, their whole personality is being a member of that community, it closes their minds. I think that we should definitely start to provide a character to these people, and I think the representation is where it starts. Because I was thinking of you know our last guest, Dr. Lester. I don't know if you watched our last podcast, but what we talked to him about was the fact that he trained his kids from a young age to read books about biracial couples, because his couple was interracial marriage, and because of that, they became accepting of the interracial community. So I think that at a young age, a lot of us Americans being comfortable with the fact that we have people of other of different sexual beliefs is something that we can do, first of all, to make our community more accepting of the LGBTQIA community, but second of all, to make people who are part of that community more accepting of themselves. And I think that it's a dual-headed spear right here. I mean, both issues are just as important. And I guess I wanted to mention to you and ask you, what do you think is the most important thing that we as peers can do to change other people's perception of the LGBTQIA community? Because I think that a lot of people right now, and it's unfortunate to say it, but they don't support same-sex marriage because of their religious beliefs. So how can we change people's perspectives? Because I feel like you've had much more experience than I guess me and Damien have.
Yeah. Well, I think especially at now your current age and the place us and our peers are in, I feel like the main thing is just being accepting and trying to normalize it, because everyone's constantly treated like an outsider when they come out. It's just a very difficult thing. And society is definitely getting better at that in some regards, but still there is this polarization, you know, being treated differently from your peers. And I feel like just treating people like normal human beings instead of, again, like a talking point or like some sort of spectacle would definitely be helpful.
Well,
yeah, Damien, I'm gonna say one thing before you speak.
Yeah, no, go for it.
Thank you. And my point is that, like, I think that people have to stop trying to be understanding so much. And I say this because I want them to be know that they can never understand, or even it's hard to understand the LGBTQ community when you're not a part of it. You know, you can't put yourself in somebody's shoes unless you've lived in their journey and walk their walk. I think that you have to be comfortable with not understanding completely, but respecting a person's decision enough to saying they're different and I'm okay with it. That is the
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you 1,000%, Varun. But, you know, we're talking about the talking point, and I've mentioned this on the podcast. Something that I don't enjoy, and I think that a lot of minorities don't enjoy, is being pawns or being seen as kind of a vote. And you mentioned like talking points or just being seen as a spectacle. Sorry, I lost my complete train of thought there. But, you know, it goes back to kind of something that Varun mentioned earlier with, you know, J.K. Rowling saying that some of her characters are of the LGBTQ community and you know, SpongeBob being announced to be in the LGBTQ community. But, you know, I have absolutely no place to speak on this, but I feel like it's kind of, I don't like, you know, from my perspective, that I feel like, I don't know how to word this without sounding like, I want to come across as, I'm not trying to be offensive at all, and I have absolutely no grounds to speak on this whatsoever. But from an outsider looking in, I feel like I don't enjoy the fact that they're just trying to, I feel like they're trying to do it just to get the LGBTQ community support and kind of get them to back that show or that character. I feel like it doesn't come from a place of sincerity. Would you be able to kind of, you know, relate to that? Or do you think that it's a good thing that these characters, regardless of what their history has been and how they were intentionally created, if that's changing?
Yeah, representation is a very difficult thing to get right. And certainly the J.K. Rowling especially did not do that well in the slightest. And SpongeBob, the whole SpongeBob situation, I mean, I know the creator explicitly said that he's asexual, and which is technically would be a part of the LGBTQ plus community, in my opinion. But now trying to retcon him as homosexual is an interesting take. But yeah, it is sometimes you can tell that it could just be publicity or them trying to get on the right side of the LGBTQ plus community to gain supporters, especially J.K. Rowling, who is, you know, a known transphobe, who is trying to make all her characters seem, oh, they're actually diverse and really, I was really progressive with my characters. And it wasn't just about a bunch of straight white people, you know. It is difficult. It has to be intended. In the beginning, I feel like you have to have a solid plan for your characters or your mascot or whatever, what you want, and to try to force it on later. It comes across as forceful, and it might turn away other people like yourself who see this as just a big publicity stunt, and it could lead to negative feelings about the LGBTQ plus community in general.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have any issues with the characters being gay or bisexual. What I have an issue with, and as me being like a member of a minority community, obviously being Hispanic, I don't like when I don't like the feeling of it not being sincere. I want, you know, if someone's gonna appreciate me for who I am, whether that be gay, whether that be Hispanic, whether that be, you know, just me as a person, I want that to be sincere, and I don't want them to kind of do it. And in a sense, to just try to convince me that they're a good person. So I'm happy that, you know, that was a point that we could agree on, because, I mean, that was like a 50-50 for me, honestly. And me and Rune talk about getting canceled, and it's like, yeah. I don't want to get canceled for that one.
And you know, it's like we talk about controversial things, and that's what we're here for. I think that, you know, me and Damien always talk about this. We can be wrong. And we accept that we can be wrong, and we love to hear different perspectives. Now, I think that I somewhat disagree on what you say, Damien, and I'm going to say it for one simple reason. It's because I think that even having gay characters, I don't care if it's sincere or if it comes from a place of good-heartedness. I think that what it does is that when you have young people, like little kids, toddlers, and elementary schoolers, when they grow up in the atmosphere of having people, characters that they can look up to, even though they don't have sometimes a valid friend group, which is part of the LGBTQI minority, I think that it gives them a place to vent their feelings. And why I say this is because 2/3 of LGBTQIA deaths between 10 and 13 year olds comes from bullying, from suicide because of bullying.
Yeah.
And I think that even by having these characters, I don't care if it's from a place of sincerity, I think that it kind of accustoms these people to the community in a way that hasn't been done before. And I think that the effect of that is more important than the reason behind it. Obviously for us, being educated, politically active teens, we see behind that. And we see that there's flaws in how it's marketed and the reason for why they're doing it. But nonetheless, my perspective is that it helps young people understand and accept themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. I think that it's good. It's great for acceptance in the long run, but I just have a problem with it being insincere. And I hope that in the future that, because it just, I mean, Charlie, I think that you would agree with me. It's kind of weird to see, I forget the name of the character, but both of them flirt like throughout the whole, like all the movies. And like, I didn't read the books, but like throughout all the movies. And then like all of a sudden, like he's gay now. And so I feel like it might confuse and might, malrepresent the LGBTQ plus community. But no, I think that representation in youth and for the youth, no matter the background, no matter the point of interest for the person doing it, is great. But I also want to see that sincerity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I 100% get that. Yeah. It can have ups and downs of insincere representation, but ultimately, I feel like we should work towards there being sincere representation.
Yeah, no, and you know, a thing that this is kind of a personal thing, because, you know, I always talk about being a centrist on the podcast, and I really want to gauge everyone's perspective on different things. So with that, I ask another question where it's like, I might be canceled, but, you know, I'm never going to shy away from anything that I'm genuinely curious about. And I ask this with 100% good intent, but what do you think the beliefs are on the fact that, you know, a transgender person can go from being a man to being a woman? Now, there's been arguments by even transgender people saying that they can never be a true woman, not only biologically, but because of the fact that they haven't had to grow up as the struggles of being a woman. Now, this isn't to say that they don't have their own struggles, but I think that having the character of a woman comes with growing up as a woman and understanding the true difficulties. Now, I would argue that transgender women face more scrutiny and obviously suicide rates are extremely high in the transgender community. But what do you think about not only the science, but the societal kind of idea that they have completely become women?
I'm definitely 100% supportive. I believe trans women are women and trans men are men. But I do see where you're coming from, that they might not have the exact same experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, like trans women, they have their own issues to face, discrimination. Yeah. And then trans men face definitely a lot of fetishization and stuff, even within the LGBTQ plus community. It's And I mean, the science is definitely there. I mean, we even talked about at my Catholic school in biology class, how, you know, trans men's brains, they're definitely more similar to a cis man than to a cis woman, and vice versa. So, and then I'm not sure, I haven't looked deeply into non-binary brains, how they work, if they're somewhere in the middle. But I definitely think that societally, you can say with 100% certainty, they are the gender they identify as. That is how they have always seen themselves. That is who they are. But I guess you definitely, there could be some opportunities societally that they've missed out on, that they haven't experienced. But that isn't just like, you know, that isn't to invalidate their identity.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. I think that, you know, coming back to science and how, like, how that's represented in our community, I think that people just don't pay a good deal of attention to the fact that it is okay to not understand and to accept somebody for who they are, no matter, you know, if you get it or not. I think that we have to look at it from a bird's eye perspective and just be tolerant. Because people say tolerance sometimes is not discriminating against certain minorities. For example, the Latino and African-American community. But if you, like, are complicit in discrimination against the LGBTQIA community, I have no words for you. Because it shows that you're just, you kind of dehumanize individuals who are pursuing their own interests. And I think that me and Damien talk about this a lot on personal episodes, and I'm kind of relating this back to our discussion now, Charlie. It's the fact that, you know, being comfortable with oneself helps people through depression and suicidal episodes. And the fact that even though these people are working every single day to become accepting of themselves, and obviously you as well, people are still overshadowing that and saying it's not okay to become accepting of yourselves, which I think is in furtherance of suicide. You know, you're furthering somebody to not accept and be comfortable with themselves by putting them in a certain box. So I think if we want to stop suicide and stop people hurting themselves, we have to first of all be accepting of them and not just bypass the issues which are so important. Now, I wanted to ask you specifically on a school-wide level, and this is kind of a personal question because I've been kind of dealing with it on a school-wide level, and I know Damien has as well. But do you think we have enough representation within, I guess, the school? And do you ever feel comfortable going to a counselor about your own issues as being a member of the LGBTQ community?
Oh, God, no, definitely not. We certainly, I mean, especially the area we live in, there's certainly a limited amount of representation and, I mean, just a limited amount of knowledge, I guess. I think most counselors that I've seen worked with, they just don't have the amount of knowledge to deal with, people of the LGBTQ plus community that in the struggles that they're dealing with specifically. I think that, you know, it needs to be trained. It needs to be implemented into the training of counselors and therapists and, you know, just in general to deal with, because it's certainly now that society is becoming slightly more accepting. A lot of people of younger generations are starting to come out earlier in life, and they need that support system because, you know, the studies show that suicide rates are incredibly more high when people aren't accepted. I think having that, just that whole, just having that at schools, just someone there to talk to would certainly improve a lot of kids' situations.
Yeah, well, I mean, suicide rates alone in the trans community, I the last time I looked at the stats, I believe, and anyone feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that it was 50-50. Which is insane. Like 50% of transgender people, again, from the stats that I was looking at, are prone to commit suicide. And I just thought that that's absolutely ridiculous. Now, with that being said, I have always looked at the situation of counselors as just the representation in general, as opposed to training, because I haven't even thought about the training front at all. I've just always thought that, you know, when I think about representation and when I think about true representation, I think about the African-American boy that went into the White House and grabbed Obama, asked if he could touch Obama's hair and said, you know, mommy, look, he has hair like me. And that's what representation is. Representation is being able to go to talk to a counselor who had themselves to come out and be, you know, and ask them, how can I do this? What steps should I take to do this? How do I gain further acceptance? Now, speaking of acceptance, and this is something that I wanted to talk on earlier, Varun, when you were talking about, you know, accepting different people. I think that we also need to, part of accepting different people needs to be the acceptance of ideas both against and for the transgender community. Again, I have absolutely no grounds to speak on this. Like nothing. If you, you know, that's why we have Charlie here. You know, he's more, again, we would love to have representation from all branches of the LGBTQ community. But right now, you know, I think having Charlie has been absolutely amazing. But, you know, I'll share personally. I've always had the belief, and I'm always inclined to change on this, but personally, I've always had the belief that, you know, if someone has two X chromosomes, then they're a girl. And if they have two, an X and a Y, that they're a boy. Now, I think that people can do whatever the hell they want. And if you come up to me and tell me that you're a girl, I'd say, hello, ma'am. Like, I genuinely don't care. And if someone came up to me and told me, you know, oh, Damien, your science is wrong, I'd be like, okay. Like, I really, and I think that goes part about just letting people be who they are. And everyone just needs to let everyone else be who they are. And I think that that's just going to solve a lot of issues in America. You know, and I'm always inclined to change, and I'm always inclined to think of things differently. But that's just one of the more centrist views that I've had. You know, Charlie, you feel free to disagree with me. And I mean, even if you want, you know, you can try to show me why my viewpoint is completely wrong. But I think that regardless of my viewpoint, I always want people to do what makes them happy. And my viewpoint will never affect anyone. I'll never, you know, share this with a person who's transgender. I'll never try to disprove the fact that they are who they are, because honestly, I have no say in who they are. They can be whoever they want. And that's the beauty of this country. And unfortunately, it's the people that impose their beliefs and who might impose beliefs or use the science that I'm kind of speaking on to persuade people that transgender people are delusional or something. And I think that that's absolutely ridiculous. I think that you're delusional if you're really trying to persuade someone to be someone that they're not.
Yeah, I would certainly just recommend for you to look more into the issue, because
I definitely will.
There is a lot of science into it, like the neurology of the situation. I think definitely just accepting people's identities, even if you don't necessarily agree with it scientifically, is wonderful. That is leaps and bounds above other people.
Well, I don't understand I don't understand it scientifically. I would never disagree with anything scientifically. I just genuinely don't understand it. And I think that conversation of not being, you know, the thing is, some people might be scared to say, hey, you know, Charlie, I don't understand the science behind the transgender community, because they're scared of kind of getting canceled. And we brought this up on the podcast before, but like, I genuinely just have the question, and I will definitely look into the neurology of it. And if we have you on future episodes, I'd definitely love to discuss what I found.
Yeah, I have to agree with what Charlie said, because I've done my own research, because I was at a similar standpoint as you, Damien. Before I became friends with a bunch of people from the LGBTQIA community, I was pretty much against it. You know, I always was tolerant towards people, but scientifically I never understood it. But once I made friends with these people and I knew them to be the best people, I think a lot of my best friends are members of the LGBTQIA community, because I love speaking to them. And what they've taught me in speaking to them is the fact that transgender brains are, they have certain aspects of, for example, if you're a transgender female, you have certain aspects of a female brain within your own brain. So I think more than biologically, it's neurological. And okay, the fact that somebody's brain, and you can look it up for yourself, it should take a little bit, but it took me 5 minutes to understand. And I think that 5 minutes towards everybody's day will help them. And I suggest all of our viewers right now, at the end of this episode, go up and search up the neurology of a transgender brain. And I think by looking at that, you'll become very, very educated. And I think Charlie can agree with me on that.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that you guys are sharing it with me, because honestly, I would say that, you know, in this area, I am just, you know, like, this is probably my smallest area of expertise, and I'm not shy of admitting it at all. I would say that I am completely ignorant to LGBTQ matters. And I think that a lot of America's issue starts with admitting the ignorance. I think that we need to just admit ignorance onto things that we don't know, and we need to stop pretending like we know stuff that we don't. You know, I really don't know what it is like to be gay. I really don't know what it is like to be transgender. Yeah. And I definitely don't have any science to back either argument. And I would never, even if I did have science, hell, even if all the science lined up and everyone in the world agreed that, you know, that all of everything was bogus and that even being straight wasn't real, I wouldn't care. I think that it's just, I think we need to ignore, you know, Ben Shapiro. Someone that I've always based my conservative views off of says that facts don't care about your feelings, but we shouldn't let facts guide our feelings towards others in the respect of who they want to be.
Yeah. You know, I think that I kind of lost my train of thought there. I was going to say something, but I think that when you look at a person, you can't, I don't think that before, even before I became understanding of the scientific basis of transgenderism, I think that I never asked any questions. You know, I looked at a person and I don't judge them based upon how I scientifically view them. You know, are we analyzing a person, taking x-rays of them now? I mean, like, if we're saying that, then we can analyze a person based upon if they have a brain tumor, mental problems. We can't base views off a person based upon how we neurologically assess them. I think that what we have to do is we have to stop worrying about other people's beliefs, because I don't think it's fair for anybody to concern themselves with somebody else, because it's simply it's bigot-like, you know, egotistical.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that we have to worry about ourselves, and part of worrying about ourselves is the fact that we have to be tolerant, because that makes up who we are. And if you're not tolerant towards the LGBTQIA community, I feel sorry for you, because you're not a very woke person, and you really don't. And it's okay, Damien. I think that even you not understanding the science behind it is completely fine, because you're still tolerant. But the people who say that a person has to fit their norm, you know, we talked about Damien about how Jesus fits the normal white male, and he really wasn't that. That's the kind of people that we have discriminating against the LGBTQIA community today.
Yeah. You know, and a question that I had for you, Charlie, again, you know, I'm just trying to discover, I'm trying to ask different questions now. Are people that consider themselves transracial, are they members of the LGBTQ community, or is that something like completely on its own?
I would say that is something completely different, since I think it just shares the prefix of trans.
Okay.
Since the LGBTQ plus community is you know, it's sexuality and gender identity.
Yeah.
I don't really have any place to speak on the transracial community.
Well, Varun, what do you think about the transracial community?
Honestly, I think they're making a joke and mockery of the transgender community. I say that because, and it may be very controversial, but I do not agree with that. I mean, I think that I can be tolerant of somebody who's transracial, but I don't think I agree with it whatsoever. I think that it is making a mockery, because there's people who have neurological differences in how they view themselves. But race should not define you. And what I mean by that is, like, race is not big enough to determine which kind of person that you are. There's no neurological basis to race. Race is the color of your skin, the amount of melatonin cells that you have. You know, I think that people are that's basically biology. You're either born white, born black, born brown. Born Latino. I mean, you're not going to change that. And I don't think by changing it, what are you going to achieve?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, are you going to become a different person by changing the way you perceive yourself?
Yeah, no. And I mean, we're going off on a tangent here, but that's what we welcome to Polititeen. That's what we do on episodes where we have different guests on. But, you know, to kind of wrap up this tangent, I just think that it's, you know, and I think having Dr. Mason, I think he was the one. I think it was Dr. Mason who was the one that didn't believe, or that, you know, science has shown that race biologically isn't like a thing. Like, it's literally just like a different. Yeah. You have different pigments. Yeah, it's just so I don't know. I you know, if you want to think that you're black and you're like Irish and you're like pitch white, like, or pitch white, I guess, what's the term here? Like, I don't know, white is whatever, fill in the blank, but you know, and if you want to believe that you're black, like, go ahead, do whatever you want, but like I don't know. I agree with you in a sense, Varun, that it's kind of making a mockery out of it. Because like there's people that really struggle, that really like, you know, exactly. Behind the fact that there's no like biological proof that anyone is even black to begin with, or that anyone is Hispanic to begin with, people still suffer the consequences of being societally black, and to like think that you will fit in. And I feel like I don't know. It's just such a complex issue. I think that we should just get back to a more complex issue.
with more pressing, because I think that transracialism is something that, I mean, nobody looks at. I mean, it's a small community.
Yeah.
But then again, the director of the NAACP was transracial, but that's a whole nother discussion that we can have, Damien.
We need to talk about that on another episode.
We need to talk about that. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I wanted to just open up the floor to anything you wanted to say, Charlie, because I think that I just wanted to hear from you about just the future of the LGBTQ community, because I was going to mention something that I had on my mind a couple of days ago for some reason. I was just having a discussion with my dad about the don't ask, don't tell policy from Bill Clinton. And it just goes to show that there is no difference between somebody unless they make that clear. And what I mean by that is, like, when somebody is gay or a member of the trans community or any LGBTQIA association, I think that until they make that distinction clear, nobody views them differently. But as soon as that happens, they start to view them in a different light. And I think that is why people don't come out as much as they do. And the don't ask, don't tell policy was literally 8 years ago. And I know you know this, but for any of our viewers who don't, what it says is that military people can stay in the military as long as they don't reveal their sexuality to their coworkers. And by doing that, you're putting somebody in a box and not letting them get out of that box and shutting them in that box for the rest of their lives. And that was 8 years ago. So Charlie, how far have we come and how far do we have to go?
Well, honestly, we've made great strides just in our lifetime, honestly. Thinking about where the community was back in like 2000 or, you know, the 80s during the AIDS epidemic, it's insane the amount of progress that has been made. But globally, there's a long way to go. It's still, you know, homosexuality is still a criminal offense in many, many countries, and same-sex marriage is only actually legal in a handful. So there's a long way to go. I think acceptance in general in individuals is something very difficult that we need to tackle. It'll be, you know, it'll take generations to make, you know, normalize transgender issues and same-sex marriage, you know, the whole nine yards. It'll be a difficult adjustment for society in general. But yeah, with the don't ask, don't tell policy, it's rough. The fact that was only 8 years ago, that hurts for sure. And it's just a difficult life. There's certainly different challenges that people have to face, but we are making progress. For sure, the Trump administration has caused a few setbacks, but in general, I think we are
everything,
on
though.
Progress. Yeah, that's true.
It's just being the Trump administration. That's Trump being Trump. It's just setbacks. Healthcare setbacks. You know, being black setbacks. Gay. Like, don't feel bad about it. Trust me. It's just Trump. It's not you. It's not you. But no, I mean, if you have any questions about our ignorance, or if you have anything that wants, or my ignorance, I don't want to, you know, speak for myself, but if you have any questions, like, I mean, if you want to inform me on something that I mean, that you might think that I don't know about, like, feel completely free. But on the topic of this, I think that it's crazy that, like, women still face, like, in some countries, like, them driving is like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, it's insane to think about the fact that in America, you know, women gained the right to vote. A century ago, but
yeah, only though. That's so weird. Only 100 years ago.
Only 100 years ago, you wouldn't be allowed to vote if you were a woman. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of oppression, even in America. You know, they're certainly still discriminated against. But it's progress takes a long time, especially since now is the only time it's becoming, you know, socially acceptable to be politically correct. And even then, only in some circumstances. It's going to take a while.
Yeah. And I think that an issue with progress would be the fact that people are scared to be politically incorrect.
Yeah. That's true.
I think people just need to come out and sometimes say stupid stuff and learn from it. And that's what I want to gauge your perspective on cancel culture, Charlie, just, you know, just you being you. I feel like you know, me and Varun, I think we did talk about it on Friday's episode. The episode that came out on Friday, and we were like, it's just, I think that it's gotten to the point where people can't grow. And you know, if I know that I've never made a homosexual remark, like to make fun of someone for being gay, or for being part of the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community. But if I had in the past and I had made that remark, the fact that I can't remember it should go to show that I've grown so much as a human. Now, the fact that I could still be canceled on Twitter and, you know, for that action, it I don't know. I feel like canceling has just become like an elitist movement. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely think it's almost social justice has become performative. People are just trying to get, you know, Twitter points to be the bigger person. I think certainly if someone has refused to change and they're old enough and they've made mistakes multiple times, then certainly considering deplatforming them would be a good option. But, you know, these random internet stars that said something when they were 12 on Reddit that gets brought back and shoved in their face even after they've apologized profusely, it can be taken way too far. So I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, Damien, I have to kind of, on a sense, say I have a different story with that. You know, as a straight male in Forsyth County, our area, I have, you know, I've said the F word on some circumstances, not recently, but over a couple of years ago. And the thing is, I can never forget that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never going to forget it and never look back on that and say I never did it, because I think that it makes up who I am. By me coming out and saying that I have changed for the better. And I think that ignorance is part of the reason for why some stuff are so brought out, because I remember when I said it, I knew what it meant, but I didn't, you know, I didn't associate it with that.
Yeah.
You know, right. I think that a lot of words that we use that are so demeaning towards the LGBTQIA minority communities, we don't truly, you know, understand it completely what they mean.
Yeah.
And even if we do, we choose to ignore that.
Yeah,
because it's socially acceptable. Now, what should be socially acceptable is the fact that we should be uplifting other people and things like that. I think that now we're making a change for it, but I don't think cancel culture is the solution. I think if somebody says something offensive to somebody, you should talk to them instead of posting on social media to gain, like you said, Twitter points, cookies, and just be right every single time. No, I think it is changing a person's perception is one of the most powerful things that I've seen in the human race. And I say that with a strong validation. When you change somebody's perception for the better, and I'm sure you guys have felt that, you feel like a more accomplished person because you've really changed the world for the better. Because that person's never going to forget what you said. And when a person first confronted me about saying the F word, I'm never going to forget that. That encounter is something that changed who I was and how politically correct I was. And I think that instance makes up who I am and why I'm on the podcast today.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, even going back on that to clarify this, in that sense, yes, I in the past, I think most, I think that it's ridiculous to admit that no one's ever said something offensive. Like, I think that people that, like, act like they're, like, the whole, like you're God, like, even Jesus offended people. So, like, relax, like, you're not perfect. But, like, no, and you know, it was kind of interesting that you brought up the whole subject of the F word. I think... maybe until 2 years ago, you know, F word was something that was never really in my vernacular either way. But I didn't know that it was like even in reference to anything LGBTQ. Like,
really?
I just thought it was something like, I thought it was just like the other F word. Like, I thought it was just something that you just said to kind of just be mean to someone. But that just goes to show how like messed up as a society we are, that we use term like I had perceived the term as something offensive without knowing that it was literally something offensive to gay people. And it was used as a, or I had it used in my circle, I don't think many people in my circle even knew that it was used for like gay people. But it's weird how we use words and how that, like, I don't know. It's, if you get what I'm saying here, it's like, it's weird that the word was just used as something offensive, but it's also used as something offensive towards gay people. And it's kind of messed. It's like really messed up how, that's what we knew it as before we knew it's like roots in the LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just wanted to gauge, you know, we're talking so much about acceptance. I think that people who aren't accepted should be on the same front here. I think that African Americans and gay people should have a similar kind of mode of action towards creating acceptance, because I think that Pure Politine, our mission is to create acceptance through conversation. And I think that even today, you've opened up my mind, and I'm sure you've opened up Damien's mind.
Definitely.
For a fact. And I think that through a conversation and discussion every single day, we can really open up minds in America. Because before I had LGBTQ friends, I never really understood. I thought they were, you know, I personally, based on what I heard and Indian stereotypes from my family, I thought they were like you couldn't touch them. You know, they're neurologically challenged. But that's not the case. You know, I think that based upon what your parents tell you, it makes up who you are. And I was told some very bad things by my parents, and I've confronted them about that. And it really made me a very ignorant person. But I think that high school specifically has been a place for where I can explore the people who I talk to. And college, I know college is a very good place for people to meet other people who aren't like them. And you're forced to make those connections as being a high schooler and a college student. And throughout your life, you're going to have to make those connections. And I think that the more people have those connections and speak to those people, conversation is where it begins.
Yeah.
Acceptance begins with a simple talk.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know,
absolutely.
It's interesting because you talk about like stereotypes and stuff. And obviously, in being Hispanic, I think most Hispanics are Catholic. And so I grew up in I was always told, whether it was in church or by my parents. And this is, you know, this is where the story kind of has a better silver lining, I suppose. But, you know, that a woman was meant to be with a man and a man with a woman, and that anything other was sinful, right? And, like, even my mother, you know, she'd tell me that. But, like, now it's so crazy how, you know, obviously coming from immigrant roots, that's all they knew. But, like, how much just living in America, and I think it's a testament to how much we've changed as a society. But now they tell me it's like, oh, like, who cares? Like, they'll tell me, like, oh, I don't care if your sibling comes out as gay. Like, I love them. Like, I don't think that it's a sin. I don't think, and if it is a sin, then too bad. Like, shame on God. And, like, I'm like, who am I talking to? Like, you did not tell me this, like, growing up. And it was like, it's very nice to see the fact that people can change. And I think that as a society, we need to allow people to change and grow.
Yes, absolutely. I 100% agree.
Yeah. I guess I wanted to ask you before we end, you know, have you seen people change? I mean, have you influenced change, Charlie, in any circumstances?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in a very similar situation, Damien. My parents are both raised Roman Catholic, so my family was the same. And then when I came out, I certainly saw a change in my family. You know, they're still good, God-fearing Christians, but there's certainly been a change. And even people I know, when I came out to them, you know, just friends from school, they've certainly tried to make an effort. And, you know, it means a lot just to watch that change, like you were saying earlier. Like, it's such an incredible feeling to watch people grow and learn from their mistakes and become accepting who I am, who so many people I know are.
Yeah,
definitely. And I mean, culture has become so big in our world to where I think a lot of people are saying on social media that nobody can change. Like, change is an irreparable thing, because if you change, why weren't you like that a couple of years ago? Because you had all the information that you could have. But I think that, you know, like I said, change is not made by facts and by throwing. In fact, I could never accept the LGBTQIA community from a bunch of facts and figures. Personally, I can only accept somebody based upon a conversation and mm-hmm. really coming to terms with what that is. And I think, first of all, the solution that I've reaped from today's discussion is that it begins with conversation. And second of all, that it begins with having role models and people to look up to on television, in books, and in different places like that, atmospheres. But I guess we're running to the end of our time here, Charlie. And I guess I wanted to ask you, I guess one ending question, because we ask all of our guests an ending question. If you had one quote one phrase, one saying to say to any of our young voters and young viewers across America who are watching today's podcast, what would that be?
Oh, God.
Yeah, and take a minute to think about it.
Okay. Well, let me think. I don't know of any quotes specifically.
You can make a Charlie quote.
Make a Charlie quote?
Yeah, you can just anything, anything, any statement, anything that you just want America's youth to know.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess just, love is love. Accept each other for who they are. Don't be too quick to judge because people can change and grow. That's certainly something that I've had to deal with, judging people based on immediate reaction. But just love and tolerate acceptance. Woo.
All right, pride. Perfect.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I think that was that's absolutely perfect. I think love is love was an extremely strong message and something that we all need to take in our hearts as we go on for the rest of our days and have these political conversations, which we at Politatine incline you to have. Go out and have conversations with people that you wouldn't have had conversations before. Maybe people that you've offended before. Something that you're ignorant to. Just go out and have political conversations and have discussions about culture and society. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Charlie for coming on the podcast. And, I want to thank Varun for joining me as always. And we hope that everyone here has a good rest of their day.
Absolutely. Peace out, guys. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for watching today's episode of the Politatine podcast. As always, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Politatine Show or to send us an email at politatinepodcast@gmail.com to connect with our initiative. And lastly, as always, a huge, huge, huge thank you to our research director, Julia Hartman, for inspiring the wonderful content that we present day after day, and to our graphic design director and Jada Pilling for the graphics that illuminate our segments. Thank you so much and have a great rest of your days.